Welcome back to Hoops HD, everybody. Happy holidays. This is the Hoops HD report coming to you a night earlier than normal here on Sunday, December 23rd. Yes. I'm your host, Chad Sherwood. Over there is David Griggs.
Yeah.
John Titel. And back with us for the first time in a while, Matt Sikowski. Welcome back, Matt, first of all.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. I think I somehow escaped the puppet bunker, and now I'm ready to roll.
All right. Tell everybody why we're coming to them a night early.
I don't know. I was available tomorrow night, actually. I didn't have any plans. I think it was you, David.
I mean, it's just, again, this time of year, you have to remember what's really important. And what's really important is the Diamond Head Classic. We just wanted a day to kind of mull over the first 2 days of games and then going into the last day. So we're coming, a night early.
Oh, well, I thought we were actually recording this as the games are going on, though.
We are.
I've got Colorado and Hawaii on my screen right now. But
yeah, me too.
I guess we've got a lot to get to, a lot of exciting games that were played at least yesterday on Saturday over the weekend, including the number one team in the nation going down. But let's start by pulling up the screens, and let's start things off, I think, in the SEC tonight. If we can get this up here on the screen, it should be coming up right now.
All right. Happy holidays from everyone's favorite strength and conditioning coach.
Oh, David, what the heck's going on here? I thought we were looking at standings.
Well, I told you we're getting into the spirit of the Diamond Head Classic. Andy's all fired up.
Andy's all fired up. Let's go to the real standings here. Come on, Andy, come on. There we go, SEC standings. And we saw some pretty good games over the weekend in the SEC, the most notable one being as part of the CBS Sports Classic, if I could say. Titel, let me start off with you. How about that game?
What Kentucky network carried those games?
NBC. Kentucky beating North Carolina, they're 80-72.
A fantastic effort by a very young team against an experienced team with a great coach. Not that Calipari is that bad. I really thought that, like, it might have been a result of Carolina's schedule over the past 30 days, which I would argue has been one of the most challenging in the entire country. As you can see, Kentucky's strength of schedule, only 135. When we get to the ACC, I think you'll see Carolina's a little higher up the list. That being said, they deserve all the credit. I really think Carolina is national championship good. And so to have the Wildcats get the edge on them, I think that's one of the better quality wins you'll see this season.
Right, and I'll pull up Kentucky's team sheet here also. If you look ahead, it does not get easy and easier for them, John, does it?
Not at all. That being said, there are only two losses so far to Duke and Indianapolis on the season opening day, and by a single point to Seton Hall at the Garden. They're favored in each of their next five. I know they're not going to be easy ones, but imagine they get to 14-2 overall and then a brutal three-game stretch at Auburn, post-Mississippi State, post-Kansas. I mean, this team is not going to end up number one in the country because they have a very tough schedule in the month ahead.
Yeah, and David, if we got to look at it, Kentucky's next game is coming up next weekend at Louisville, one of the great rivalry games out there.
It is, and this year's edition of it, I was pretty down on Kentucky because, if you look at that profile, imagine it without that North Carolina win. Well, about 28 hours ago, that's what their profile was, just nothing on there other than a home win against UNC Greensboro. This changes the complexion of everything, and they basically led tip to buzzer. I was really impressed with them, and I've liked how Louisville has played this well this year as well, too. So while the teams aren't as highly ranked as we've seen them in the past, although Kentucky is shooting up there, I do think that both teams are playing really well, and it's not going to be easy to go in there and win at Louisville. Michigan State wasn't able to do it. I don't think anybody's been able to do it. So, I mean, that is a very tall order.
Matt, a couple other teams we want to talk about here. Mississippi State, who had looked so good, really struggled with Wright State yesterday. Now, they did get the win, but any cause concern there for you on that Mississippi State team?
That's one of those. I'm still kind of in a holding pattern with them. I know they did have the nice win at home against Cincinnati. But it's still, I want to see what's going to happen as they keep playing, like the Kentuckys, the Auburns, the Tennessees, maybe even the Floridas. What is going to happen with them this year? Because I don't totally trust in them yet. I know their numbers all look pretty good. They've got a very nice record. But that's still one team I am firmly waiting to see before making a defensive judgment and lead towards, hey, they'll still be 10-8 or 11-7 in the SEC.
Tytel, can I ask you about this Vanderbilt team here as well? Also, after the win over Arizona State, they go and lose the game to K-State. I know it was in Kansas. I guess it's a neutral court, but is this a tournament team here from Vanderbilt? You know, that Arizona State's game started looking very good, isn't it?
It is. So I think I was on record a couple weeks ago saying that once Darius Garland went down for the year, this was not a tournament team, which is why I still don't know how they beat the Devils. God bless them for doing so, of course. I mean, if you can beat ASU, you can make the tournament, but I really don't see how they did it, and I think that that was the exception rather than the rule. And I think the season's going to go downhill, although when you got big old Simi Shidu on your team, anything's possible.
David, one other team I want to ask you about is the Auburn team. Got a battle from Murray State. I think it's more of a show that Murray State's actually a quality team, but any cause for concern that it was only a 5-point win?
Yeah, I think there is. And again, like you said, we really like Murray State. If you follow Under the Radar, you know about them. But when you look at not just what happened to Murray State, but
the NC State game also, yeah.
The NC State game they lost. And the game before that, UAB, who isn't even in the top four or five of Conference USA, takes them to overtime. So when you look at Auburn's last three games, they certainly haven't looked like a top 10 team really at any point.
All right, but if you look at the profile there, I mean, the only two losses are top 10 losses now that NC State's that high.
Right, yeah, now that NC State's that high. But what's their best win? Have they beaten anybody that's inside the bubble? They haven't. I mean, I'm not saying this isn't a good Auburn team, but, like, they haven't really looked like a top 10 team, a protected seed caliber team, at least not in the last couple of weeks.
And really, if you look at that schedule until that Kentucky game on the 19th, there may not be a real challenge here.
Yeah.
Other than maybe – is it time, Matt, is it time to speak a little Ole Miss?
I just saw the other day, I couldn't believe how high they were at the Power rankings given their expectations. I mean, we know Kermit Davis is a hell of a coach. What he did at Middle speaks for itself. So, yeah, and in SEC, we're like, I could name four good teams, and then Florida looks good on paper, but their results haven't really shown it. Why not? Like, I figure the SEC probably will get a fifth or sixth team in. So, I think Ole Miss might be one of the better candidates for it, actually, given their coach. Like, I think there was some talent on that roster that Andy Kenny left behind. Not a ton, but, like, enough to where, hey, in a down league with a good coach, kind of maybe like Chris Holtman with Ohio State last year. I don't think Ole Miss will quite replicate that, but that you saw that formula last year, and Ohio State went, like, 15-3 in the Big Ten. Like, it wouldn't stun me say Ole Miss goes, like, again, like 11-7-ish in the SEC and is in the conversation come March.
Yeah, and if you look at their profile, Chad, I mean, nothing great, but, you know, they have beaten Baylor. They did beat a couple others at Illinois State. That was a pretty decent win.
Yeah, at Illinois State.
Like, so nothing outstanding, but a couple decent things on
and don't overlook that San Diego win. Quietly a very good team there out in, with the Toreros out there. But here's the upcoming schedule on the right-hand side for the SEC. Tytel, let me ask you this. Other than the Kentucky-Louisville game, anything you're really looking forward to in the next 7 days here, or is it just kind of get ready for conference play after that?
I think the Baylor-Florida game has a great chance to be a great game. I wish we could have seen this in the past when they had their legendary future NBA stars and the Brad Stevens and Billy Donovan era, but I think it should still be entertaining in terms of two decent teams from two good conferences.
There was a very memorable game in the past in the 2000 tournament.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they played a couple of really good tournament games, but I'm looking forward to that one because I think you get the sense that both those teams kind of need that win because they're good, but they don't have the paper to show it yet. So let's see what they do against each other.
All right. On that note, why don't we use that as a segue here to go right over to the Big East Conference. And Matt, let me start off with you because your Marquette team picked up a home win against a MAC team, which normally is a bye game and no big deal, but it was over a pretty darn good MAC team this weekend.
Oh, yeah. Buffalo, I think probably the best MAC team I can remember since either Wally Zerbiak of Ohio or the Antonio Gates Kent State team. That's a really good
The Kent MAC State team.
that's impressive. I think Buffalo is a legit top 25 team, and most of that game, I thought that was the second-best team Marquette had played all year next to Kansas. Like, at the end, I think you saw a little bit why, say, Buffalo is still a MAC team, or, like, there's elements of it. Like, they faded. They didn't have the depth to where, like, when a legit top 25 high major team hit him in the mouth, they didn't have it in them to hit it back in the end. And then a little unfair what Marcus Howard did to him, but that's still maybe still like Buffalo. That's maybe still like 5, 6, 7 seed, not protected seed.
Oh yeah, I agree with that. Like, I don't think I never thought that they were protected seeded good. I mean, we'd been putting them up there because of their early paper, but I could see them landing in the top half of the bracket. I really could. And I know that Marquette kind of widened the margin at the end, but for about 25, 30 minutes, Buffalo was right in there. And let's not forget, they haven't been at home much, and they were just coming off of another road game where they beat Syracuse. So I don't think this really sets Buffalo back. I mean, they lost on the road to Marquette, who, if I'm not mistaken, doesn't have a home loss yet.
Oh, no. Like, his only play, they had two semi-competitive games. Even the UTEP game was not, I think, quite as close as the score. So, like, the only competitive game at the new arena is the Wisconsin one.
Yeah.
And, Ty, I know you've been going to a lot of the Georgetown games this year. The Hoyas putting together another record, but, you know, I don't – have they really played anybody?
Not yet. And I don't know that they're going to with Howard coming up next weekend. But
then, as you can see, Marcus Howard. That's just Howard.
Yeah, that's just – yeah.
A harder test might be Marcus Howard 1-on-5, actually. But
yeah.
Look at the list. You can see, obviously, starting on January 2nd, there are no triple digits there. It's all double digits the rest of the way in a not great Big East conference, but certainly solid. And I think that they're going to be very tested because they've been a bit of a home court hero, as you see, 7-1, and the strength of schedule 181 is pathetic. That being said, like, I wasn't sure how good this freshman backcourt is. Yesterday, it was amazing. Mac McClung, a career-high 38 points. James Akinjo, a career-high 25 points. The Georgetown record book and media guide doesn't have records specifically for freshmen. But when your freshman backcourt is combining for 63 points in one game, I have to think that was literally the greatest backcourt performance, specifically for freshmen, and maybe for any Georgetown backcourt in history.
Yeah. David, I got it right there, a team with another lousy strength of schedule.
Yeah.
Yet it's undefeated. It's one of 5 undefeated teams left in the nation.
Right. Well,
Johnny's with a powerful week, but didn't they? Beating.
Yeah. Well, they've played a schedule that I think 50 teams would be undefeated against. Now, I'm not saying that they're not a top 50 team, but nothing about them being undefeated indicates that they are. They entered conference play last year with a big out of conference record, you might remember, and got absolutely trounced once they got in the conference play. I do think the Johnnies as a program have really improved. I got to give it to Mullen. He's done a lot better than I thought that he would. But coming up, they've got Seton Hall, and it is – I mean, there's a few planets in between that game and their next – and what their hardest game up to this point has been. I we'll see what they're made of in the next two games. But looking at this, would it be preposterous if they started off 0-4? It really wouldn't be.
It wouldn't be preposterous if they didn't win another game all season, quite honestly.
Yeah. I think they'll
I'm sure they will, but Matt, what about Providence? A nice road win at Texas. Now, Texas, I think, has been underperforming all year, but still it's a road win against a Big 12 team.
I felt like Providence, I'd almost like the shape they were in now if they didn't have either the Wichita State neutral court loss, which most years that's perfectly fine. This year that's a blip on the radar. And I believe they have one other ugly loss on their resume, and that hurts the fact. I think at BC, it's probably at least going to probably be a quad one win, given I think BC will probably be a top 70 team. And now at Texas, who, I mean, obviously they scream bubble, but still will be in the discussion, I think, at least for the tournament. So, like, if they didn't have their slip-ups, you're in decent shape. But I think they probably need 11 Big East wins. And they've got to hope A.J. Muse is back soon for that. Even though I know they always seem to get better as the year goes on and generally put up pretty decent Big East records, I think they have a lot to ask for this year.
Yeah, the other bad loss was the UMass loss at home.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, that's on the screen there. I knew there was a bad one also there, but what about the – there's a few other teams, though. Tytel, you got teams like Creighton and even Seton Hall now, and Villanova starting to make a little noise. I mean, maybe the – is the Big East starting to rebound from a bad start?
I I guess. I mean, after Villanova's horrible start, there's nowhere to go but up, although obviously when the Penn Quakers host you and you go down, then not looking so great. Creighton has been amazing in terms of 8-4 is nothing to write home about. You look at the four losses, Ohio State by single digits, Gonzaga by 11, a great Gonzaga team. Nebraska, they got blown out at in Lincoln, but obviously the Tim Miles effect, it's hard to beat anybody.
There. Well, yeah, it's hard to beat anybody. Nebraska is undefeated in the state of Nebraska.
And then a loss at Oklahoma, who's got a great record. Nice to get a cupcake in Coke College where they won by 50 points on Thursday. But the fact that they're losing games only to the best teams in the country makes me think that they could not – I don't think it would be a surprise. I think they can beat St. John's, an undefeated team, because they're that good.
Yeah. David, Seton Hall, another nice win after the Kentucky win. Now they win at Maryland.
Seton Hall, if you look at them, yeah, they've got the Kentucky win. They've got the Maryland win, both away from home, albeit one of those wasn't very far away from home. Mm-hmm. But you have to kind of – Seton Hall always seems to put together a pretty solid profile and do it quietly. I mean, they're in a power conference. They're 9-3. They've beaten, I believe, two ranked teams, yet no one seems to be excited about them. Kevin Willard's done a really good job, not just this year, but throughout his entire career there. And you have to start to look at them as doing more than most of the rest of the league, don't you?
I would agree with you.
I've of the teams, because I've basically seen them all. Like, I like them actually third best. I still have Marquette and Nova, and they're probably right with Butler, maybe Butler and Creighton in that 3-5 range. And then the Johnnies that schedule, they're kind of like, that's like, I like the tall team. I'm not like, especially they've done a nice step away from home. They're so low in the net because actually from following the net the last couple of weeks, I actually think it's a decent metric so far. But that no, they're not 70-some better teams than the Hall.
Yeah, only a few games coming up in the next 7 days here in the Big East, most notably that Butler-Florida game we already discussed in the St. John-Seton Hall game.
Xavier at DePaul.
The only game on the entire calendar for Thursday, UMKC at Creighton. If you're looking for something to do Thursday, that might be all you can do.
But Stalika is not here, and we can't limit. If Xavier does not win at DePaul, they may not win on the road all year.
Literally, they got Georgetown still too.
Yeah.
Let's go over to the Big Ten Conference. Another one of those remaining undefeated teams, Michigan.
Yes. Well, two, like Nebraska, undefeated in the state of Nebraska. They have more wins in Nebraska than anyone in the nation, including Duke, Kansas. They got more wins than those teams in the state of Nebraska combined.
Michigan remains undefeated, as I was saying. But Tytel, how about Ohio State? Just crushing UCLA as the other half of that CBS Sports Classic that was on some network that we don't know.
In fairness, I think the four of us could crush UCLA this month. But that being said, Ohio State not only getting it done on the football field, but also on the basketball court, only lost by 10 to a decent Syracuse team, and four now top 100 wins. In addition to UCLA, Cincinnati, Creighton, Minnesota. They have a nice cupcake game coming up against High Point on Saturday. Then the
Tubby test. Smith.
Yep.
6-7 against top 35 teams in January. Michigan State, Iowa, Maryland, Purdue, Nebraska, Michigan. We're going to see very early on. We're not going to have to wait till March to figure out what this team is made of. We're going to find out in January.
I don't know. You know, everyone's saying they've got a bye game here against High Point. I know it is a bye game, but they struggled at home with Samford. They struggled at home with Bucknell. And you got Tubby Smith coming in. Matt, you want to join me on the upset bandwagon here?
No.
No, not quite. Okay. I think Chris Holtman's just a warlock. Like, that team has no business being where they are with that roster.
They really didn't last year. I mean, he's just done an amazing job.
I mean, at least like we found out in hindsight, Kaden Bates-Diop was finally healthy, and he was at one time a McDonald's All-American level recruit. It's just he had an injury mark career. He was healthy last year. And I think just a new coach freshened things up. But this year, man, like, I don't know, like, who are the like, and what's scary, what he's doing this year, and when you bring it next year's top 10 recruiting class, what's going to happen then? Like,
Not much else really happened this week in terms of notable wins, Dave, but anything else that really stuck out for you in the Big Ten?
Well, not in general, but just kind of the overall disappointment of, I mean, we kind of dogged Purdue last week, but it isn't just them. Penn State, we are expecting good things out of them. They've kind of fallen flat. Northwestern, they've lost – I mean, to be fair to them, they've lost three gut-wrenching losses at home. Is this league underperforming? Or, I mean, it's still really successful, especially when you look at Michigan and Ohio State and Indiana and what they've done compared to what their expectations were. But what the hell is wrong with Purdue?
I can't say this league is underperforming. You've got, I mean, look how many top 50 net teams you have. If you go to 51 and you include Minnesota there, you're only looking at the bottom three teams of that list there that are not, at least look at the rankings, you know, in the tournament discussion that as we head to the new year. So I can't say it's underperforming at all.
No, yeah, I had about six of the Big Ten preview podcasts, and now I'd say over under like 8.5 bits probably at this point.
Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in the Big Ten. Tytel, we've got some interesting games, including Belmont at Purdue. I think you want to circle that one.
I want to circle the spread. I think Purdue's going to be favored by double digits, which in a normal year at home, a Big Ten team against a small school like Belmont, I get it. And Carson Edwards might like score 40 easily. But I don't know. I'm not a betting man, but that seems like a lot of points for a Belmont team that has looked very strong already.
I think Belmont has looked better than Purdue. I don't know if they're so much better that they'll go there to beat them up on the road, but, like, they're pretty good. And don't forget the Huskers here taking on another really one of the top 10 teams from the state of Minnesota.
Also circle, though, this Wisconsin at Western Kentucky, a road test for Wisconsin against a Western Kentucky team that's having some – off-court problems as well, and hopefully they can get things straightened out here.
Rick Stansberry getting the hold on the program now.
Okay. Tytel, no, you don't want to do it. Let's take a quick look over at the Pac-12, where we saw another one of the most notable games of the weekend here, despite all that red and all those losses there. Let's start with the big win and what Arizona State did to the Jayhawks for the second year in a row.
Huge win by the Wildcats to hang on and beat UC Davis by two whopping points. Great. I really think that Kansas is feeling the loss of Udoka Azubuike more and more as the season wears on. I think he'll be back in the weeks ahead, but no way to know if he would have affected the outcome. I think he would, but I can't prove it. Coach Hurley beat Kansas. I believe they beat him in Manhattan last year. Excuse me, Lawrence, and then beat him again. This year in Tempe is an amazing effort. To have a young team and to have the different people like Remy Martin and Rob Edwards contributing, it was a total team effort. The crowd was also amazing. I expected that when you have the games in December, I can tell you with Georgetown this weekend, it was very empty because all the kids took their final exams. They're home for winter break. They had the third largest crowd in the history of the ASU gym, I believe Wells Fargo Arena. Because I think that when you have a big state school like that, you have a lot of people who stick around for the holidays because going home is just going a few miles away to where they live. And they had a huge turnout. They had Jason Kidd there. They had Governor Doug Ducey there. It was an event, and I really think the crowd helped the Devils get over the hump.
Yeah. Matt, when we had our podcast last week, the only team we even discussed and the only team we look on there on the net that was in the top 50 was Colorado. They just lost to Hawaii about 3 seconds ago that went final. So we have no other top 50 net teams, I expect, when the ratings update tomorrow in this conference. Is this a one-bid league?
Quite possibly. Like, if Arizona State is like a strong conference champion, they win the conference tournament. Like, I don't see another at-large resume among them. Now, I remember last year Arizona State dragged a few teams across the finish line, so we'll see if they do that again this year, although I don't think this year, too, the Pac-12 is so bad that, like, if they take a few hits to the chin, it'll hurt them, too. But, like, no, I can't see it being more than two bids. Like, Arizona State's in decent shape, but after that, like, it is the saddest power league I have seen. Even that might even be worse than the Pac-12 a few years ago that only had two teams.
Yeah, David, here's the upcoming schedule in the Pac-12 coming up on the screen. Are you even going to bother?
We got Wazoo Santa Clara. Okay. UCLA better watch out for Liberty. I'm more interested because of Liberty than I am because of UCLA, but they better look out for them. And Seattle, if they don't watch out, Cal might beat them.
That's on that note. Let's go back over to the Big 12 here. And start? I mean, Kansas, we discussed it already, though. But David, they after the win over South Dakota, the loss to Arizona State. Is there any cause for concern really here? I mean, especially once they get healthy, or is it just
They weren't healthy. They were on the road. They were in a snake pit. And if anything, I think they're better now than they were before that game. You can't look at what they've done all season long and be concerned. I mean, I'm sure their egos may be bruised a little bit, but there's no reason in the world to be concerned.
Tytel, what about this other? The other nice win I saw this week was actually a pair of nice wins. Came from the Sooners, both beating Creighton and then winning at Northwestern.
In addition to beating Wofford, Florida, Dayton, Notre Dame, and USC, they are beating up on a bunch of bad teams from good conferences. However, each of their 19 remaining games are going to be against top 100 teams, because unlike the Pac-12, the Big 12 is actually a big time conference. So I don't know if Coach Kruger can sustain the success. But the fact that he's 11-1 with the number 2 strength of schedule in the nation after losing one of the best players in the country in Trae Young, I mean, I don't think he's getting a lot of talk for conference coach of the year or for national coach of the year, but I think based on the circumstances, he deserves a lot of consideration.
Matt, we've got a couple other teams here with only one loss also, though. TCU, Texas Tech, and also solid records from Iowa State and Kansas State. Is this still looking like a 7 or 8 bid league, or are you down to around 6 at this point?
I would set the over at about 6.5. And Texas Tech, if they stay healthy this year, I think they win the conference. I really like that team. I know it's bold to pick against Kansas. It seems like I've been doing that the last couple of years of living dangerously, but no, Chris Beard's another great coach. Actually, I like some of that talent on that roster too.
Yeah.
Culver, forget what the recruiting rankings are. Like, that kid's a stud. And, he'll be in the pros next year. I really like Texas Tech. I mean, Kruger obviously coaching his rear off in Oklahoma. And that TCU sneakily has a lot of talent, especially with Jalen Fisher keeps getting healthier after his various injuries, gets more in the flow. And that's it. Alex Robinson having a great senior year. Desmond Bain's a really good college player.
Yeah, David, you had a comment on him too?
Oh, I was just going to say, I echoing his praise of Texas Tech. I've been big on them all year. But, when you look at this conference, there's 6 teams, or at least 5, that look like tournament teams. Iowa State, despite the bloated record, I'm probably not as impressed with them as I am with Texas Tech, TCU, Kansas, and Oklahoma. But one of the teams I wanted, West Virginia, it's just really, really bad.
Yeah, West Virginia, disappointing.
They won against Jacksonville State. We think Jacksonville State is, 4th or 5th in the OVC, and they edged them out by 2 at home.
Yeah, West Virginia continues to struggle. I guess we should also, Texas with that loss, or I mentioned to Providence. Baylor, the strength of that Arizona road win, Tytel goes and loses at home to Stephen F. Austin. After already losing
to Oregon, they own the Pac-12.
Let's go to the ACC. We didn't do the upcoming schedule in the Pac-12. We should. I'm sorry, in the Big 12, we should take a look at that first. There it is. Tytel, anything that you're going to really circle here, or should we just have gone on to the ACC?
I think it's a light week, and we should move on.
Okay. George Mason.
Lehigh, Lehigh probably better than Jack State. West Virginia better not overlook them.
TCU, after finishing up the Diamond Head with a true road game at Hawaii Pacific, a very rare true road game against a non-D1 game team. So.
Yeah, it is very rare. That is a rarity to see a D1 team, especially from a power league, playing a road game against a non-D1 team.
I remember LaSalle doing it a couple of years ago.
LaSalle's done it. I think Louisville did it, although it may have been an exhibition game when they went to open NKU, Northern Kentucky's arena. And I want to say
that was an exhibition game.
Done it again. Hey. Played BYU Hawaii before a tournament out there. It does happen typically in connection with these tournaments, but
no. I have to say, a few extra days in Hawaii, well played, JB Dixon.
ACC, there it is at the top of them, Matt. Virginia now 11-0, probably not going to be number 1 in the nation, but might be number 2 in the nation at this point.
No, they're again really good. I like the element of hopefully if they get Kai Clark back here pretty soon from his wrist injury, because I think he had a little bit different element for them. And yeah, the fact that they got Braxton Key eligible, he's another piece. So you could go either small with Clark or you can go big. Yeah, Jerome guy, and then, yeah, Hunter and Key, you're like four guys, 6'4", bigger in the perimeter. So they can do play many different ways, and that's still obviously still very good both ends of the floor. And I still say, like, at least in regular season play, they're the favorites until someone beats them in the ACC.
Well, David, what about Duke, though? They probably will be number one team in the nation. They were number two.
Right, and again, it's kind of hard to argue against that, at least if you're voting the way that the pollsters vote. They only lost that really close game against Gonzaga, and they've basically rolled everyone else over. Did get a pretty good game from Texas Tech, but ended up with the win there. And if you look at their profile, I mean, they've beaten Kentucky away from home, Texas Tech away from home. A lot of really big wins, Auburn away from home.
Coming up a second here. It's
That's still Ohio State. Oh, there.
Ohio State. It's loading here. There it is. Yep.
Okay. Yeah. They blasted Indiana at home. So why not number one when you're talking about beating teams that are going to be in the top half of the bracket away from home?
Titel, team I put up on the right there, though, Florida State. Nobody's been talking about them, but should we be?
Yes.
We have to. Only when your only loss is by 6 to Villanova, then you're playing in good. Plenty of quality wins, Florida, LSU, Purdue, UConn, St. Louis. A nice cupcake game coming up against Winthrop on New Year's Day. And then consecutive Saturdays that will test anybody. At Virginia, hosting Duke. I hope that they get their homework done on Friday night because school's going to be out on Saturdays.
Yeah, tough schedule ahead for them. NC State also sitting there at 11-1. Yeah, especially off of the strength of that win over Auburn. How about the Orange, though? Matt, Jim Boeheim, for the first time in his entire 300-year career at Syracuse, has now lost back-to-back home non-conference games. He did stop that streak, I believe, over the weekend with that Arkansas State win. But back-to-back home losses for the Syracuse. Is this Orange team just heading right back to the bubble where they always seem to be?
Oh, yeah. No, it's gonna be so bad when they're like 9-9 in the ACC, but they like beat Duke at home to get themselves in. Like, it's in that, like, I mean, I thought they were a little overrated going into the year because, I mean, face it, they weren't all that good last year, and then they win a few games in March. Everyone's like, oh, this is a top 25 team. I didn't quite see that, but, like, there's still probably a bubble-ish team in that the one, like, obviously, they're losing to Buffalo. That's no shame in that. Now, the Old Dominion loss, that's one. I think ODU is a good team, but that's – if you're a tournament team, that's a game you should be winning at home. And that, but still, that's like I'm done. Like with the opposite of Virginia, we're like Syracuse, so they'll be 9-9 or 8-10 in the ACC, but have a couple of big wins somewhere that prop their profile up. And when I hear them in that new gimmicky announcement thing, if they do that again this year, Syracuse going to Dayton.
Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule here in the ACC. Titel, let me go to you here. If there's a game too that you're really circling in Friday and Saturday, other than that Kentucky-Louisville game we already discussed.
I'm going all the way to Sunday with Lipscomb at Clemson. This is the definition of a trap game, and I'll explain why. So you have a Clemson team that will be hosting a 3 p.m. in the afternoon game on Sunday, December 30th, when the last thing people are going to be caring about is college basketball.
What? So,
This yesterday, they had a huge win at South Carolina, their in-state rival. The following Saturday after the Lipscomb game, they play at Cameron Indoor Stadium against a little team you might have heard of called Duke. This is the epitome of a trap game. Lipscomb is a good team, and if Clemson does not focus 100%, they are going to lose that game.
I kind of agree. I like this Louisville team a lot. I don't know why they're not getting more attention. They're not really close to the rankings. They probably won't be ranked tomorrow when the rankings come out. But, like, you know, an overtime loss to Marquette, who's pretty good.
I'll objectively say they probably should have won that game.
Yeah. They have a win against Michigan State. Albeit it was at home. Their other losses, Indiana by one at IU. That's not any – I mean, we're talking about a team that's actually lifted quite a bit of weight.
I think a sneaky good win at Seton Hall.
Yeah, and they beat Seton Hall, who beat Kentucky on a neutral floor. So, I mean, there's some pretty good things on their profile. There's nothing bad at all on that profile. Yet Louisville seems to just kind of not be into the consciousness. I'm kind of wondering why.
Well, if you look at the metrics, I mean, those are all solid metrics. Those are the metrics of a six seed, you know, something like that, which, you know, should
be and I think that's
for a top 25 bid.
Yeah.
Let's go and take a look at the American Conference here, where we have one of our five remaining undefeated teams still in Houston, who survived a real tough test from winless Coppin State today, 75-44. David, how about the Houston Cougars? Are they going to lose at some point?
Yes, they'll lose at some point, but they're still really good. I think that they're a solid tournament team. I think they're in on the first ballot in the top half of the bracket, but I don't think they're going to run the table and go undefeated.
You don't think they're going to go undefeated?
No, although that is impressive. Wins over Texas Tech, Indiana, Auburn, Kentucky. That is.
Yeah, gotta give me a second update here. Come on.
And that is
LSU at Oklahoma State at BYU. There it is.
Yeah. So I was kind of big on Houston coming into the year, and now that everyone else is big on Houston, I'm not quite as big on them as everyone else is. So it's kind of weird. But I do think that they're good. I do think we'll see them in the NCAA tournament. They are perhaps the best team in the league, if not the most fun team to watch.
One more bye game against NJIT before conference play starts, although that then starts with a couple more bye games against Tulsa and Memphis.
Well, Tulsa's not doing bad. I hate saying that because I don't like their coach, but
Tytel, how about the team on the right there? How about Fran Duffy's Temple Owls?
Not a lot of meat in the upper left corner, but two very close wins by 10 or less in Tier 1 and Tier 2 with Villanova and VCU. The problem is the schedule. One of the hardest January schedules you'll see from a non-power conference team: at UCF, at Wichita, host Houston, and then even if they're favored against Penn and Memphis, which I think they are as of today, certainly not easy games, and then they close out the month with Cincinnati at Houston. Very, very tough January for Fran Dunphy.
I can't believe you skipped that East Carolina road trip.
Believe it.
Matt, how about Cincinnati? You know, they also destroyed UCLA this week.
Yeah, that's another one. In their biggest test, they failed so far. I think they're a decent team. They're definitely not the two-seed quality team they were last year. Probably more like 7-9 seed, I would guess, in quality. Their resume actually might not even be that, because, like I said, beat UCLA at home, congratulations. So will any team with a pulse this year beat UCLA at home or on a neutral.
Let's take about 10 seconds to look at – oh, wait, you know what? We should look at the upcoming schedule before we go to another conference that we're going to spend 10 seconds on. But upcoming schedule there, okay.
We can move on to the next one.
Yeah, there's nothing. 10 seconds now on the conference known as the Atlantic 10. And if, you know, we wanted to talk about how awful the Pac-12 was, Pac-12 looks pretty good compared to this.
Duquesne, kind of a good story. Keith Dambrot, 9-3, doing a real good job with the exception of the Penn State game where he absolutely lost his damn mind.
Yeah,
took a chance of maybe from winning the game. VCU, kind of hard to figure out. At the very least, they're schizophrenic. Everyone else is just bad. VCU is at least inconsistently bad and good.
Well, I do want to do two things. First of all, I want to congratulate LaSalle, not only picking up their first win of the season. I was there, Battle of the Winless Teams Friday night over Alabama and A&M, then followed it up with a tournament championship by beating Towson. So from 0-10 to hoisting a trophy, congrats to the Explorers.
Right, and one of the best defensive plays I've seen all year, where they forced a really impressive basket by Towson.
Yeah, they forced Towson to slam it into their own net. Basket.
Right.
Tytel, how about that Duquesne game?
For anybody who didn't see it, we should just go silent for a minute and play the video of the last minute of that game. It was actually the last 5 seconds. Duquesne whistled for a foul, questionable call. Coach Dambrot loses his mind, as David says, and gets
at this point the game was tied.
Followed by a 6-point possession by making 6 of 6 free throws to win the game by 6.
Yeah, and you double technical on the coach at a tie. You can't do that. I know he's upset, but you can't do that.
Yeah.
Matt, here's the upcoming schedule in the A-10. If there's anything worth even watching, maybe. No.
So St. Louis is the only one that has a profile that might have a little meat on their profile, because they did beat Butler and Seton Hall, but like, I still don't know how the hell the committee is going to drag a second team out of this league. Like,
I feel like they're going to drag a first team out of this league. Come on.
Well, no, that's the one. Like, I felt like this should be a one-bit league for a couple of years now, and then I know the bodies end up probably earning a bit late last year, but it's still this year. Like, how can they get a second bid? Because like, I don't know the thin air they'll create it out of, but it'd probably be like Slew going 16-2 in the league and then losing in the conference tournament.
Let's let's take a look at the Mountain West and one more undefeated team we haven't discussed yet. How about the Nevada Wolfpack getting it done? Got a battle from Akron, but it's a tough Akron team, and they did get the job done.
12-0, favored to win every single game on their schedule, but each of the last four wins have been by single digits. None of them are on the road. So as much as I want to see an undefeated team once in my lifetime, I don't think this is going to be it. They do have the experience, four seniors and one junior in the starting lineup. So they're going to have the edge when you play anybody else on their schedule. Unfortunately, I've been underwhelmed by McDonald's All-American Jordan Brown. He had 16 points against our good friends at Cal Baptist a month ago. Since then, he scored 16 points in the last eight games combined. I really thought he was going to be going on the upward trajectory. He is heading south.
I heard a stat today that the average age of the starting five for Nevada is over 23 years old, all fifth-year transfers and sixth-year players on this team. That's amazing. But
that's what I'll say, JT, as talented as Brown probably is, the kid that starts in front of him is really good. Like, they probably should be playing max minutes at the five. So, and then you're not playing over the Martin Twins or Caroline. So,
Dave, is there anyone else even worth talking about in this conference?
You caught me doing choice. Okay, I'm back. I like this Utah State team a lot. I realize that they're kind of, I think that they're good enough to push for the bubble and maybe land inside of it. And I know that they haven't always answered the bell, but they've answered it enough to where I think that they're pretty good. The other team I want to talk about is New Mexico. And the only thing I want to say about them is that I have no interest in discussing New Mexico.
Upcoming schedule in the conference here, we see Nevada has a road trip to Utah, and Wyoming hosting Dixie State. They may actually pick up a win.
Yeah.
And New Mexico, a true road game at University of the Southwest. How about that?
Yeah, another one.
I think they actually play that game on a high school gym, and it's some type of trip day or something like that. Who knows? Anyhow, let's go to one last conference here, the West Coast Conference. And let's start with the Zags, who are sitting there at 11-2 now with a powerful win over Denver, and Texas Arlington, kind of a week off, Matt, huh?
Yeah, that's the one. I think they need probably a little bit of a breather, and they got
one. They're about to get about a 2-month one.
I want, like, that's what, first of all, like, USF, I think that's the one. If USF goes like 16-2 or something, or like 15-3 in the WCC, I'm going to want to see them in the tournament. So I think they're legit.
Oh, me too. I love this San Francisco team.
And then, I mean, others like San Diego. I mean, St. Mary's is down, but they're still respectable. Like, they're just not top 30, top 40 good like they've been the last few years.
Yeah, we saw a very disappointing loss from Loyola Marymount to UC Riverside. That team had held this as one loss, so I kind of ran them off. But, Titel, how about the Dons?
To think that there is a West Coast Conference team, and with the Pac-12 this year, maybe a West Coast team, period, who has a better record than the amazing Gonzaga Bulldogs in December, it's mind-boggling to me. Like, I understand that their schedule is atrocious, but a four-point loss to Buffalo in Belfast away from being undefeated. They should be 15-1 when they host Gonzaga in a couple weeks. That being said, when your best win on the schedule is Harvard at home by four, I understand that we should pump the brakes a bit. But I think that they could go, like Matt said, like have a very strong conference record because there's not a lot of great teams in this conference. St. Mary's 8-6. What happened there?
Yeah, right. That 294 strength of schedule for San Francisco, not good. David, you had a comment?
Well, yeah, and I agree with Titel. There's not a lot of great teams in this conference, but I will say this. There's more decent teams in this conference than what we're used to seeing, not just San Francisco. LMU, while they had the like set your head on fire loss to UC Riverside. I mean, it's just that smells so foul. They're still sitting here at 11-2. San Diego is up by one with less than 10 seconds to go. If they hold on here, they're going to get a trophy against a pretty decent Drake team. Pacific isn't even decent, but my God, they're not one of the worst teams in the world like we've seen recently. Everybody in this league seems to be better. And look at this, like, you know, all 8 of the 10 teams currently have records 500 or better. That is not normal for this league.
Yeah, and don't forget Santa Clara, who did beat USC this week.
They only, well, you know.
Let's take a look at the upcoming schedule in the West Coast. We've got interesting BYU at Mississippi State there, and some conference play actually, I think, getting ready to get underway. Grand Canyon at San Diego. Kind of circle that one, too, I guess.
Yeah. BYU, well, no, that's not worth circling. North Alabama, are they going to pick up their first ever win as a Div 1 team against a Div 1 team against Gonzaga?
Yeah, I don't quite think that's going to happen. Let's say, I want to take one other profile here. I'm going to pull Buffalo on the left here. They are a top 25 team. Well, as we record this, Furman is technically top 25 as well. I'm not going to pull them up because I expect that to be under the radar by tomorrow when they drop from after their loss to LSU. But Buffalo should remain in the top 25.
They should.
And road trip to Canisius before they start conference play, David. Where do they, you know, how good are they going to be in this MAC?
Good. I mean, I don't think they're going to run through it because it's hard. Like, they play in the tougher division to where they're going to be playing at Akron. We saw what Akron just did, albeit in a loss to Nevada. They go to Kent State. That's not going to be easy at all. They go to Toledo. That's not going to be easy at all. And the one thing that they're going to have to deal with, and it's nothing unusual. In fact, it's normal when you're in this situation. They are everyone's showcase game in this conference for the rest of the year. I don't think they're going to run through it, but I don't think they have to. I think if they go 16-2, 15-3, does the MAC play a 16 or 18 team game format? I've already forgotten.
It depends on how many games are on the screen there.
Yeah, I think it's 16. Well,
I think
okay.
It's 18 games.
It is 18. Yeah, I know that like they do this weird thing with the division, but if they go 15-3, I think that's good enough. I really do.
Okay, with the San Francisco win and those three nice tier two road wins.
And again, West Virginia, that win might let them down a little bit. It looked really good at the time. I don't know how good it's ultimately going to end up being, but I think the Syracuse win will look pretty good. And just overall, I think that the Mid-American Conference is strong enough to where if they're winning, it won't sink them. It might not raise them up any. In fact, it won't. But I don't think it will continue to drag them down the way we kind of saw Monmouth the one year. Their numbers were really solid going in the conference play, but they declined little by little even though they were winning. I think the MAC will do that.
I think that Syracuse, that's eventually going to be a tier one win. Yeah. I think they'll be top 70 in the net come March.
Yeah, they only have to move up two spots for that to become a tier one win, being a true road win, so that should be a tier one. But on the link, I'm going to pull this down here, and actually, I want to run a quick question by each of you here. First of all, we've got 5 undefeated teams left in the nation: Virginia, Houston, St. John's, Michigan, Nevada. Matt, let me ask you, who do you think is going to be the last to fall of those 5?
I'm going to go Houston because I think Utah State picks off Nevada.
Okay, you go Houston. Ooh. Interesting. Ooh. Tytel, what do you think?
Man, I want to go Nevada. I see Matt's point. Houston does have an easier schedule than early. I'll go Houston, but it would not at all surprise me if it was Nevada.
David?
I'm going Nevada on the grounds that Nevada is a lot better than Houston, even if their schedule's a little bit tougher.
No one's joining me on the St. John's bandwagon?
John's might lose 5 of their next.
I would not be surprised if Michigan is the last team standing there. That's how good I think this Wolverines team is.
They are really good. They are really good.
But on that note, let's go over any final thoughts of the night. Matt, let me start with you. Any other thoughts or comments on the evening?
And then I am looking forward to seeing how this net's going to play out. And I think after its initial release where the numbers looked a little bad, they've steadily gone to something that I think looks like a nice amalgamation of predictive metrics and on-court results. So like, I think this is actually going to be a positive metric. And I think at least in year one, if you're in the top 30 of the net, you're getting in the tournament. So, like, if San Francisco can stay, well, it's going to be tough because their record won't be – if they lose a couple of times, their gaudy record will be slightly less gaudy. But, like, if, say, they're the top 30 of the net, I think they'll get a bid even if it's to date it. And that, because I think in year one, the NCAA is going to stay close to it. And I think in general, it's a nice metric that I'll have to evolve over time, but I think is a good replacement for the RPI. And I like seeing that. I'd like to see how it's going to play out over these next few months.
All right. Tytel.
A couple of quick shout outs to some of you guys. Chad, for going through a winless 0-10 team against a winless 0-10 team.
That was painful. It was painfully bad game. It was bad.
To Matt for making me a believer in Marcus Howard. I thought he was a good player. Now I'm convinced that he might be able to play in the NBA. And David for not mentioning the Kansas-Missouri border war. I really appreciate it. As far as my
– we're not to the final thought yet.
Focus on Murray State sophomore point guard John Morant. Yes. Comes into tonight averaging 23.7 boards and an NCAA best 9 assists a game. Granted, he has 5 turnovers a game, so his game needs a little work. I requested an interview with him for my many preseason interviews back in September, and Coach Matt McMahon said, thanks, but no thanks, which at first I took personally because that's who I am. But he's like, no, like, we just want to keep him, in his words, under the radar. And obviously it's a little late for that because he's playing his best against the best. He played Alabama last month. They lost by 6, 38 points, 9 boards, 5 assists. He played Auburn yesterday. They lost by 5, 25 points, 8 boards, 7 assists. He's the best player you've never heard of, but he's rocketing up draft boards. So I think we'll all hear about him next spring if he decides to come out early, because I think he might be a first-round pick.
Yeah, I'll tell you, heading into the season, I thought the best under-the-radar player in the nation was either going to be Chris Clemens or Mike Daum. So far, he's been it for me, absolutely. Those assist numbers are insane. David, actually, before we go, I just want to throw one more shout-out to Alabama A&M. After they lost that game to LaSalle, they did bounce back to knock off not only a team, but an American Conference team in Tulane the next night. Yeah. In third-place game. So quick shout-out to Alabama A&M. But, David, let me let you end up the show.
Yeah, I've actually got a non-college basketball or non-basketball final thought, being that this is the day before Christmas Eve, being that we're off the next 2 days. That's why we're recording this early. This is a little bit of a history lesson. It's 'twas the night before Christmas, and I just kind of hate how things get changed throughout history. Like, this was originally written in the 1840s by, I believe, is this, let me make sure I've got it up here. Is that, yeah, okay. So it was originally written in the 1840s by C. Clement Moore, but the original title was not The Night Before Christmas at all. That's just the first line. It was A Visit from St. Nick. Another thing that was changed was the closing line. It's Happy Christmas to all and to all a good night, not Merry Christmas as it is now. The big one, Donder. It's not Donner. The seventh reindeer's name is Donder. So, again, another thing that's been changed. And then, like, the very rare beginning here, 'twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care on the hopes that George Mason, strength and conditioning coach, Andy Ingerahan, soon would be there. Like, a lot of people forget that that was – you kind of hate that that's been lost over the years.
I think on that note, we really have got to end this show. On behalf of John Tytel, Matt Zukowski, David Griggs, Handy Hinterahan, I'm Chad Sherwood. Wish everybody a happy holidays, happy and safe holidays out there. And we will be talking to you again real soon.